Okay, so you wanted to share something that you learned this week.
Would you be surprised if I told you that it was about geography?
No, I would not. Okay.
I was telling Mom that I'd really like to meet somewhere, like next year or something. And I said, I'd really love to go to Colorado because I've never been there. Okay. She said, yes, you have. So I've been to Colorado and I didn't know.
So we went camping once,
yes.
Right?
I don't remember you being there.
Oh, well, you don't even remember you being there.
It's true.
You are listening to the Struggle Well Project, the podcast that helps you love your actual life so you don't need to run away from home. We believe that perfection is nonsense and peace is a perspective shift away. So at the top of the show, you just heard my sister discovering that she has in fact been to Colorado. She did not think I went on the family vacation. I don't know where I would have gone. I was a minor. You're kind of like a prisoner of your parents when you're little. But she doesn't remember me. And as the conversation progressed, I realized I don't remember her being there either. So we were not part of a big family. So anyway, we must have had a lot of quality time together. So for those of you who love the podcast and want to show your support and get access to additional content, please join our Patreon community. Head over to patreon.com/strugglewellproject. You can join for as little as a dollar a month. I want to thank Hannah Anderson and Hannah Wieland, Heather Beck and Heather Sutter. You ladies are part of what makes the Patreon community so great. So I don't know if you saw on Instagram, but I have been talking about a way that we can easily remember what it looks like to struggle well is an acronym based on the word well. So W being wait, just create a little space between the thought and the action. E would be expect great things. Expect that God is up to something. Expect that you are able to make good choices. Just expect something great. The first L would be to look again, have a perspective shift, put on some different lenses, and look at the same situation with new eyes. And then this last L is lead out. You are a leader, even if you don't think you are. People are watching. So lead out based on this new perspective. So I wanted to start sharing perspective shifts that I have had and ways that I am struggling well, because it's just important to notice those moments and celebrate them. If you need to hear that again, it is in the highlights of my Instagram. So just find me at Struggle Well Project. A perspective shift that I had this week that's given me a lot of peace is regarding packing for a family trip that's coming up. I hate packing. And because of that, I usually wait until the very last second of the last day before we leave in the morning for the trip. And it's a disaster. So I'm starting to get my family packed a week early, and it's making it much more enjoyable. Future me is going to be so proud of present me. So this week, when you are in a struggle, use the WELL acronym and struggle well, and then tell someone, hey, I struggled well, and this is what happened. Celebrate yourself. Overcoming a struggle is a big deal. So last week was a problem solved with Rebecca, and we tackled all of y'all's problems. So make sure and circle back if you have not listened to that one. Incidentally, if you subscribe to the show, you'll never miss any of them. So make sure you subscribe. It's free, 90 free. And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. This is episode 166, and I am talking to Drew Hill. You needed to hear from him because he is an expert on teenagers. I really loved hearing his heart for teenagers, and he gave me a completely different perspective on how to love them well, even though my kids are not even close to teenager age. This chat is valuable if you have teenagers or if you're nowhere near it. I took a lot of notes based on what Drew said, so I know you're going to love this episode. So let's jump right in. Hi, Drew. How are you this morning?
I am doing awesome. Super excited to be with you and share about teenagers with moms. My heart really is for teenagers. And when I think about them, I get super excited and my heart breaks. And so I'm a ball of emotions. I love getting to talk with moms and do a lot of speaking with that group. And so I'm really excited to be with you.
Yeah. So it's funny. Those are your emotions. I think most of us moms don't have those same excitement. We mostly have fear and trepidation about teenagers. So that's why I want to talk about it, because it doesn't have to be scary, even though from what I hear from a lot of my listeners, it's either scary when you're in it or you're just spend all of their childhood scared about what it's going to be like.
I totally hear that. And, you know, my wife, her name is Natalie, and we have three younger children. And we talked about writing this book. And when I started doing it, I was like, I feel like I can't write this book yet because we don't have teenagers of our own. We have a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And then we started thinking about it. And I was like, I've got to write this book before I have teenagers because I'm not going to feel confident enough to write it after I have teenagers.
Well, yeah. Well, and it says, I read that you have been doing youth ministry for 20 years. So it's not like you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I do know teenagers, but I don't know what it's like to actually be in the shoes of parents, although I have walked alongside a lot of parents in this. And so I've heard their hearts break and I've seen the interaction between them and their kids. And I really feel like God's call on my life is to be a translator between parents and teenagers and to kind of help build a bridge and bring their hands together when they're running away from each other.
I mean, and that's what I saw so much in your book. I really loved the way that you said, hey, you know, parents, have you ever thought about sharing this part of your story with your teenager? And I don't, it was convicting and encouraging. I think you have like an objectivity that parents who have teenagers don't have. So I think that's really good. You can go back and read your book when you have teenagers.
Yes, yes, I will need to. And last night, my uncle texted me and, you know, he's 60 and he said, hey, I'm reading your book right now, and I'm sending some of these thoughts to my adult children, my cousins, right now, because it's still, I mean, the book's not just for parents of teenagers. I mean, it is for us to really understand how to be in relationship with one another and how to come alongside one another, because ultimately that's what we want. We want to be close and intimate and friends with one another. I was sitting in a small group with high school guys last night, and there were 15 high school guys, and three of them were brothers from the same family, a 9th grader, a 10th grader, and a 12th grader. And the 12th grader was like, I feel like I cannot share honestly in this group because my brothers are in this room. And I said, you know, I really believe what you want is you want to be close to your brothers. And so this is going to be a tough step and a tough hurdle in this, but really you want to be closer to them. And I think the same thing is true with us, with our friendships. And a lot of these principles in the book do apply to parents and teenagers, but they apply to all areas of our life.
Yeah, I love the reminder, like, I know what you deep down want, you know, covered up over with a lot of fear and a lot of hurt, but what you want is to be close. And so that's really good. And I did sense that throughout your book. I love it, by the way.
Well, thank you so much. It was a long 2-year writing journey. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done and set out to do. And I didn't think I was going to get it done. I didn't think my family was going to make it through because it took a lot of days off writing, and my kids and my wife made a lot of sacrifices, but we're so thankful now that it's out there. And I'm really grateful for people like you who are helping me spread the word, because it is something I really believe will help people, and people like you are the ones that help other people hear about it. So thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to get into kind of the meat of it, but what did you personally learn having gone through it? Like the book writing process.
You know, when I got the book contract that first week, you know, they had approached me about writing it because I have a blog for people in youth ministry that is well read. It's mainly for young life leaders. It's called younglifeleaders.org. And, you know, there's like 50,000 young life leaders in the United States. And I feel like young life leaders hit a home run in knowing how to have relationships with teenagers. And I'm a pastor at a church, and also on part-time staff with Young Life. And they approached me because of, you know, already having a little bit of this audience. And I had so much of this stuff already written down. But what happened for me was the spiritual battle of, as I started writing, the enemy started like just telling me these lies of like, Drew, you do not have any right to write this book because you've seen no transformation happen in kids' life. You've seen so many kids that you've invested in, whether it's through the church or through Young Life, that are not following Christ right now, and they're lost, and you didn't really do anything valuable. And like, that's what I kept hearing. And I know so many moms struggle with just hearing lies all the time about what is not true of them. And that started happening to me with this book. And then, honest to goodness, I almost just gave up and said, I can't write this because it feels like a big fat lie that I'm putting out there. But then that one day, and I write about this in the last chapter of the book, I was driving down the highway and I got a phone call from this kid who was now like 24, who I'd met when he was in 6th grade. And I was the youth pastor at his church, and I'd moved away when he was in 7th grade. And he just called and said, hey, I haven't talked to you in like 10, 15 years, but you're going to be really surprised to hear this, but I really ran away from the Lord moved to Texas, worked on this oil rig. I got involved with girls, drugs, got a girl pregnant, da-da-da. My life was falling apart. But then I got back in college, plugged into a college ministry, and now I'm following Jesus. And I just wanted to call and thank you for planting those seeds in my life when I was just a middle school kid. And then this other story happened, and you can read those in the book, but it was just like over and over the Lord kind of gave me this encouragement of like, we are not going to get to see a lot of the fruit of the seeds that we plant, but if we are patient and we really have the long haul vision, we maybe will, you know. And I think that parents have got to hear that, and moms have got to hear that there is hope. And I mean, I know I was a brat to my mom when I was a high schooler, and I didn't want to have anything to do with her, and you know, and it wasn't cool to hang out with her. And even when I was in college, but you know, I came around after the fact, and I think many kids will. That's not a guarantee at all, but I think that the seeds that moms are planting right now, if they'll be patient, they are going to watch them blossom into something beautiful.
It doesn't hurt anything. Even if you don't see it, it can only yield good things, loving and being present and investing in them. But I think we get so afraid and we get our feelings hurt because they are little brats to us. So then we don't want to do anything. And that definitely doesn't benefit.
Totally, totally. We are in this world right now where we live in contractual relationships. You know, if you don't do what I'm paying you to do, then you're fired. You know, you're out of here. If the plumber doesn't fix the toilet, I'm not going to pay you, you know, kind of deal. But the Bible and the story of God teaches us a new way of covenant relationship where we can be in this love relationship with people and love them even when they don't deserve it and even when they don't love us back.
Oh, that's so painful.
It is painful.
Yes, you're right. Almost everyone has been affected by cancer in some way, maybe even someone you love. According to the American Cancer Society, 1 out of every 2 men and 1 out of every 3 women will receive a cancer diagnosis in their lifetime. An estimated 1.6 million adults will be diagnosed with cancer this year. It may be you or someone you love, but there is hope for anyone facing cancer. There's an online source of practical information about cancer prevention, treatment, and overall healthy living. On the weekly podcast, Health, Hope, and Inspiration, Reverend Percy McCray talks with wellness professionals, doctors, pastors, and everyday people who share their expertise, experiences, and stories of hope. Visit hhidownload.com today to subscribe to Health, Hope, and Inspiration, and you'll receive 3 free downloads, 1 about cancer-fighting recipes, 1 about reducing your risk for cancer, and 1 about the 4 things every cancer patient must do. So again, that's hhidownload.com. So what do parents who have teenagers right now, what do they need to know that you feel like the parents that you've worked with, they're missing?
You know, I've been so convicted about this. Our oldest daughter, her name is Honey. It's a great name to have when your daughter lives, when you live in the South, because everybody, you know, calls her by name, even if they don't know her name. I told my wife, if we have a set of twins, we're going to name them Sweetie and Sugar next. She was not on board with that. But Honey is wired a lot like me, and she is, you know, a performer. I was a performance major at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and Honey loves to be a performer. And we went to her first soccer game on Saturday, and she got put in goalie. She'd never played goalie before. And sure enough, the kid comes down and scores on her, and you just watch her face just drop, you know, and she is just devastated. And I'm on the sideline, and I'm like, what do I say to help my daughter? And I'm just yelling, I love you, honey. Aww. I love you, honey. You know, and I'm just trying to cheer her on in her failure. And I think like that's what parents have got to realize, is that so often our kids feel like that. They feel like they have just failed, and they feel like everybody is reminding them that they're not good enough, they're not smart enough, they're not pretty enough. And so we cannot show them enough grace. We cannot show them enough love. But so often our temptation is to point out the things that they've done wrong. And often that is just a reflection of our own insecurity, because we want to look like good parents and we don't want our kids' failures to reflect upon us. Yeah. And we have got to humble ourselves before God and before our kids and apologize for that and confess that. And so much of when I have been frustrated with you, it's been my own insecurity coming out. And yes, I want good for you, but I know that your life is hard. And being a teenager in 2018, I mean, I'm going to tell you, it is a lot harder than it was in 19, 94 when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And it is a different world. And kids can tell how valuable they are by the number of likes that they see on their Instagram picture. Mm. And that breaks them. I mean, last night, I was talking to this high school guy, and we were talking about just his struggle with apathy. He doesn't want to do his work. He doesn't want to turn in his homework, and his parents are so frustrated with him. Why won't you ever do your homework? Why do you not even take a test when you're sitting there at school? And you know what the kid said to me? He said, I would rather get a zero on a test or a zero on my homework than to get a 75. Because if I get a 75, my parents look at that and they think I'm dumb. And they think that I'm a failure. But if I get a zero, it's just I don't care. And I would rather. Isn't that unreal?
You're holding on to the control then. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Man. So how do you balance the fact that, like, homeboy needs to take his test? Like, what do you do?
Yes. Well, I think you've got to get to the heart of the issue. You know, I mean, he's telling me that, but he's never told his parents that. You know, they've got to realize it. So I've got to encourage him as a pastor at his church to go and hey, you need to talk to your parents and tell them this is why you're not taking the test and why you're not doing the homework, because you have such fear of failure, because your older siblings, they got college scholarships and you feel like you are not comparing to, you know, you can't compare to them. So you've got to be honest with your parents and say, you know, you can't put me in the same category as them. I'm wired differently than them. I mean, I remember growing up, you know, I was more of the academic achiever, and my brother, you know, was more academically a struggle. He, you know, he's a good friend now. And if he listens to this, it's fine because he's smarter than me. And he's like, he makes more money than me. And he is, you know, like he struggled more in school from what I could tell as a 4-year-old older brother. But the reality is like, he was a different kind of smart. And I figured out how to do the test and things. But we've got to find where kids are gifted, and we got to fan that flame, and we've got to encourage them. And then we've got to find where they're struggling, and we've got to come alongside them and say, hey, how can I help you? And a key way to help them is to not expect perfection. I mean, kids are being crushed under the weight of social media right now because they're seeing all these other people that look like they have perfect lives.
Yeah.
And they feel like that's what they've got to measure up to. And the way that we've got to demonstrate that to them is to show them our own sin and our own selfishness. And we do that through confession. I mean, it is so hard as a parent to tell your kids, I messed up and I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, it happens to me all the time and I don't want to do it. Yeah. But every single time I do it, it is like walls just crumble in that conversation and in that relationship with my kids.
Yes, you do. You don't feel like you want them to see that you... I feel like they're not going to listen to me if they know that I, you know, also struggle with that. But of course, that makes them trust you more and all that stuff.
Exactly. I was preaching yesterday at church, and I was preaching on Acts 4 and the disciples, you know, and the first Christians living this incredibly generous lifestyle, and all the outsiders who were not following Jesus kind of looking at them and saying, these people are unreal. What is going on with them? This is sociologically impossible that they would live this way, where they give away everything they have and they sell it and they give it to the poor. Why? Because they're filled with the Holy Spirit. But I was preaching the sermon and I feel like the Spirit was leading me to confess my own ugly heart, and I didn't want to say it. And I talked to my wife about it ahead of time, and I was like, babe, if I tell them these things about me, then they're not going to want to follow me as their pastor, because they're going to like, our pastor does not have it together. Like, if he can't figure it out and he's a professional Christian, how am I supposed to do this? But I was talking about generosity, and, you know, our area just got hit by Hurricane Florence. And my initial thought, and this is what I confessed to them, and it's ugly, but my initial thought when I saw that the storm was coming and it was a Category 5 was not, oh, I'm scared for my family or for my home or for my friends or my friends that live on the coast. But my initial thought is, I have no margin in my calendar right now. I have very little margin in my bank account right now. This is going to inconvenience me because I'm going to feel guilty and obligated to drive down to the coast and help rebuild some homes and churches and give some money. And I don't want to do that. That was my initial thought. And, you know, me confessing that to my church yesterday was kind of, I did it in fear and trepidation. But afterwards, like, a lot of folks came up to me and said, thank you for being real. And for being vulnerable. And I felt like it built a relationship between me and people in the pews that I'd never even met before and that I don't know well, but it tied our hearts together. The same thing happens when we do that with our kids, when we confess our shortfalls, our sin, and we've got to do it with wisdom, But when we do that, it makes kids feel like we're approachable and trustable and real, and that we can walk alongside them because we know what they're going through.
Yeah. Hmm. How would you encourage a parent who they're not seeing any indication that what they're doing is making any difference? Like, maybe they're trying to do those things and they're putting themselves out there. Do you have any like stories of life change from like parent to kid relationships as you've encouraged the kids and encourage the parents? Like, what seems to work the best?
Again, I think it's the long haul. You know, you've got to be patient, because so often that's what the Lord's doing in our own heart, is he's kind of chiseling away our impatience and our control. And so I think what parents have got to do is have conversations with parents who've been there and who've gone ahead of them. You know, build friendships with people who are a season ahead of you in life, okay, who've had those hard relationships with their own teenagers, and ask them, tell me stories of hope, because they're there. You know, we do a marriage retreat every year in our church, and we don't bring out in outside speakers. We have couples in our church stand up and tell stories of transformation about what has happened in their marriage. But we have a ton of broken marriages in our church, and people who don't share the same bedroom, and people who don't sleep in the same bed. And there is a lot of brokenness. And so we have got to put stories of transformation in front of them. If you've been to a church that does, you know, baptism Sundays, where they make those, you know, new baptism videos that tell people stories, you know, you want to go back on baptism Sundays because you want to hear those stories. So find people that are in your orbit, not just people online that you can read, but find people that who are older than you, and say, tell me your story. What happened with your teenager? I saw that your adult daughter was sitting with you with your grandkids at church on Sunday. Were you close with your relationship with her when she was in high school? Well, actually, no. You know, hear those stories and it will encourage you.
That's good. That's really good. For those of us who have been married for a long time, sometimes we think we totally know our husband. We know the state of the relationship. Everything's fine. Or some of us know that things are not fine, but we're not exactly sure how to move it in the right direction. There's a marriage app that my husband and I have really been enjoying called Lasting. It's kind of like a counseling session that you do on your own, and then you compare the notes and then you see what they wrote. It helps you talk about difficult topics like finances and intimacy. On the Lasting app, the marriage assessment is free, but my listeners can unlock the entire app and all the premium content for just 99 cents by visiting getlasting.com/SWP and using coupon code SWP. So again, the app is free, but to download all the premium content for just 99 cents, go to getlasting.com/SWP. That's getlasting.com/SWP and use the offer code SWP during checkout. You get your first month for 99 cents. I wanted to say thank you to a new podcast sponsor, Zola. Zola makes wedding planning easy. I got married, I think it was like 14 years ago. I'm terrible at remembering. Thankfully, my husband doesn't get mad. If I had had something like Zola, it would have been a completely different experience. Over 500,000 couples have used Zola. It takes the stress out of wedding planning. You can conveniently manage everything online and in one place, saving so much time for the couples. You can create a free wedding website at Zola in minutes. You can add photos and stories about how you met. You can tell the guests about how to travel to your wedding and even recommend things to do while they're in town. And there's a free guest list manager. You can add your guests to Zola's tool and they'll help you collect missing addresses. They'll even format your addresses and track your RSVPs. Stop it. That sounds so convenient. So to start your free wedding website or registry on Zola, go to zola.com/SWP. If you are in need of a free wedding website and registry, go to zola.com/SWP. You talk about the care versus cure mindset, and will you kind of unpack that a little bit?
Yes, I had a really great mentor that gave me this wisdom when I was like 22. And he said, take your 20s and just be a sponge. Find people that you respect, work for them, learn from them, kind of take out all the experiences you can. Don't make any money. Just move around, learn from people, and be a sponge. And I'm so thankful for that, you know, and it was really hard. And part of me regrets digging deeper roots, you know, in one place. But I moved around a lot. We lived in North Carolina and in Georgia and in Colorado. But I worked for these folks. And one of the places I worked for a year was called the Dale House Project. And it's a group home in Colorado Springs for kids who've been in jail. They've done awful things. They've, you know, hurt their family members. They've stolen, they've committed sexual violence, and they've been locked up as a 15, 16 year old. Mm. And then they move out and they live in this halfway house called the Dale House Project. It's on Dale Street in Colorado Springs. And 8 of us do a year long internship and live there with them. And we just have 2 kids that we walk with. Now, the bad and discouraging and hard thing about working there is that 9 out of 10 of those kids go right back to jail. And we try to love them and do everything we can to celebrate them. But the reality is there's so much brokenness in a lot of them that they feel more comfortable and safe back in jail than they do kind of out in society. But while I was there, George Sheffer, who was the director, he spoke with us so often about what Henry Nouwen writes about, care versus cure. And he talks about so often in our relationships, we try to fix people. We just want them to be better and to be different. But really, like, Christ has modeled for us this different way of coming alongside people and not just trying to fix them, but loving them and allowing them to fall in love with you, you know, and to grow in love with you. I think it's, you know, I write about this in the book, but the YouTube clip, it's not about the nail.
It was oh my gosh, that makes me so mad.
Yes. I mean, I have those same conversations with my wife all the time, you know, and she's like, just listen to me. Don't try to fix me, you know, and kids are like that too. I mean, how often do parents hear a kid, you know, bring a problem to them and their knee jerk is to fix it and their knee jerk is to correct it and say, well, here's what you need to do differently. And, you know, we think we've got it all figured out and we probably do know how to fix it. Right. But in that moment, the key is that moment. Because the kid is asking you not to fix my problem, not to cure me, but will you listen to me? Do you hear me? Do you see me? Can you empathize and step into my shoes and feel what I'm going through? Do that in that moment. And then the next day, the next night, a week later, maybe come back with some suggestions. But the key with teenagers are the moments, you know, and we've got to create those moments. We've got to be available. We've got to put our phones down. We've got to have time where it feels like we're wasting time with kids. We've got to take walks with them. We've got to allow those moments to happen because the reality is we'll never have the quality time unless we have a large quantity of time with them. And that time is fleeting and it's going to be gone soon. And those kids are going to be grown up and out of the house before we know it. So we've got to create spaces where they can feel free to bring their junk and their problems to us. But when they do, we have got to bite our tongue and listen and reflect back to them, I hear you. And that has got to be so hard. Yeah. And when we say that and we stop right there, they're going to be like, and, what? But, yeah, exactly.
That's so good. I think my thing is to invalidate and just be like, oh, well, you know what? You don't even know. Like when you get older, you're not even going to be friends with these people that you're knowing first grade. Sometimes I tend to just not fix it, but to tell them it's not that big of a deal.
Right. Exactly. I do the same thing. I mean, I still tell kids like, hey, I know it feels like you don't have any friends, but I only keep up with one of my friends from high school. And I was cool in high school, you know, like, I mean, you know, like my mom, I asked my mom, why don't you hang out with any of these people in your wedding pictures that are hanging in our hall? You know, they're your bridesmaids, but I never hear you talk about them or see them. And, you know, my mom got married younger and she's like, well, I do talk to them sometimes, but and she's like, Drew, the reality is you're not going to be friends with a lot of the people that you're friends with now when you get older. And, you know, when I'm in high school and I hear that, I'm like, well, that's devastating.
Yeah.
That feels like my life is worthless. Don't tell me that.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, so often we just want to solve that problem. But, you know, the last verse in the Old Testament, a lot of people, have, you know, never even read it. It's in Malachi 4. But it says that he will turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the hearts of the children to their parents, or else I will come and strike the land with total destruction. So, you know, the last words before 400 years of silence, we get, this is God's like desire and hope is that parents and kids' hearts would be turned towards one another. But here's the reality. So often we care more about winning the argument or care more about fixing the problem than we do about fighting for the relationship. And we have got to choose to turn our hearts towards our kids. And so often that involves shutting our mouth and just giving them a hug and just holding them. I had lunch this week with my friend Andy Gullihorn, who's a Christian musician out of Nashville, married to Jill Phillips. And there's a story about him in the book with Jason Gray and about Jason going through a hard time and they're on the back of a tour bus. And Andy just tells Jason, hey, here's what I want you to do. I want you to stand up and look at me. And Jason's like, is he going to try to fix me? Is he going to try to tell me how to solve this problem? And he's like, I'm going to hug you. And I'm going to hug you for a long time. I want you to just sit still. And I want you to just let me love you and let me hold you. You know, it's kind of like this scene from Good Will Hunting, you know, or something, you know, just like it's not your fault kind of deal. Yeah. But that's what kids need is they need our embodied presence. And that's kind of been my like phrase that I've been talking about and thinking about and chewing on for the last few weeks is when we have social media, when we have screens between us, which is most kids' relationships, especially teenagers, is really tough to have that actually embodied presence. But God himself thought so strongly that embodied presence was important that he put on skin and moved into our world. And so texting with our kids is not the same as having a relationship with them. And yeah, it might feel like they open up more behind a screen, which is sometimes true, but often they just need us to pursue them with our embodied presence. I mean, the word media itself, social media, you know, this thing that comes in between us and someone else. What happens when we set those aside and we say, don't come between me. I want to be as close to you as possible. And I'm going to stand here. And if you will allow me, I just want to hold you. I mean, that would feel so strange for a lot of parents to do with their teenage sons or their teenage daughters. And many of them would squirm and hate it for that first minute. But I bet you, and I'd put money on it, that a lot of them would just love it and long for it. I mean, they are longing to have that physical touch and longing to know that someone wants to pursue them and be near them.
Yeah, that's so good. I found my daughter's 10 and we struggle in our relationship. But I found that going on walks, she always acts like it's just because she wants to be with the dog.
Yes.
But now, even though she'll be like, oh, the dog, you know, if the dog, for whatever reason, can't come or whatever, she's like, okay, I still want to go. I was like, really? So I'm finding that it's a really big deal, even though she likes to act like it's not.
Exactly. And I write a whole chapter about that in the book. You know, taking walks with kids is so key. And it is, it's something that I never thought about, you know, doing youth ministry. And it's something I don't regularly do with my own kids. But I went on a run with my 9-year-old daughter, and she just loved it and talked about it for days and wanted to go again. And we didn't run fast and we didn't put in headphones, but we just jogged alongside one another. And it was super bonding for our relationship. I met with one of my friends who's a clinical psychiatrist, and you know, he talked to me about this bilateral stimulation that happens in the brain when we're actually walking, when we're actually moving, and when we're actually coming alongside of one another. And I mean, if you're looking for something practical to do with your kids to build that relationship, what would it look like to start a tradition of a family walk? And, you know, maybe you just say, hey, I really want to spend time with you. Our lives are really busy, but I'd love to have this beautiful time together at night where one night a week, we just go and take a 20-minute walk around our neighborhood together. That would change the course of a relationship with a parent and any age kid.
Yeah, it really has for us. It's really been good for us. Guys, I want to take a second and tell you about a new sponsor of the show, Blinds Chalet. Blinds Chalet is America's foremost window covering experts. They offer the best blinds, shades, and shutters available on the market today. Y'all know I just recently redid my master bedroom, and Blinds Chalet is who I used. When I ordered the window treatments, it was super simple. They have so many to choose from. I just selected the coverings I was interested in. When I made my choice, I just plugged in my window measurements and ordered the blinds. They'll also help with measuring and installing if you need. So with Blinds Chalet, you get the best custom window treatment products at the best price is available. Some of the product even ships one business day after your order. See the difference for yourself and order your free samples from Blinds Chalet today. So you can visit Blinds Chalet at blindschalet.com and use promo code STRUGGLEWELL for a special discount just for my listeners. So again, that's blindschalet.com, blindschalet.com, and use coupon code STRUGGLEWELL for an exclusive discount. Any other easy, like, come alongside things that you've seen parents do that have been helpful, just in case a mom is having a hard time coming up with something?
Yes. I mean, you know, when I was working at the Dale House, with our clinical director there did her PhD work in this question of what kept these kids from going back to jail. And she, you know, interviewed all these kids, did all this research, and her finding was that the one common denominator in the 1 out of 10 kids who did not go back to jail was that they had a non-related adult who cared about them and was invested regularly in their life. Right. So a key thing for parents, no matter what the age of your kid is to have someone come alongside you and to invite someone who isn't their parent to come alongside you in helping raise your kids. And that means like setting an extra plate at the dinner table and inviting, you know, a college student from your church to come over, or inviting a single, you know, woman or man to come and eat with you. And, you know, in our culture where the average age that you get married now is 30, there's a huge gap there between when you have these friends in college and when people are average getting married. Yeah. So how are we as the church caring for those 22 to 30 year olds, you know, in this season? And I mean, I have a lot of friends who are older than that and single, and they're eating dinner by themselves a lot of night. And some of them want to, but what would it look like for us to say, hey, I would love for you to kind of be this surrogate uncle or surrogate aunt in my kid's life. And we're even going to start calling you Uncle John, you know, or Aunt Mary. And we want you to speak into their life. And I'd love for you to share some of your story. And when a kid, you know, when one of your own children hears somebody that's sitting at their dinner table share about their relationship with the Lord, it lends way more credibility to anything that you're saying as well. And so invite other people to come alongside you in that journey.
That's so good. That's so good. Do you find that's why kids open up so much to you is because you're not the parent?
Oh, totally, totally. And that's a hard thing in my role as a pastor, because I know things about kids that I can't tell the parents, because I've built this, you know, confidence. And I tell the kids, like, anything you tell me, you know, I'm keeping in confidence unless you're hurting yourself or hurting other people, you know. And my goal is not to keep it here. My goal is for you to build trust with your parents where you can tell them, because that relationship that you have with them is way more important than our relationship. And I fully believe that. I believe that God's put me as a pastor in your life, but that is, you know, for a season and for, you know, a few hours a week when we're interacting, but the majority of your life is with your parents. And so again, I want to be the translator and help be the bridge between that relationship and push that. But so often it's a slow push, because if you push too hard, kids are not going to go there. But surely kids are going to tell people that are not their parents things. But I mean, I was eating with a friend last week, and I was asking him, he's got teenagers, and I was asking him how he talked to his kids around the topic of sexuality.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, we are super open about it. He's like, I, you know, ask my son, my teenage son, really awkward questions that most dads probably don't, you know, and we talk about those things. And when he does those things that a lot of teenage boys do, he comes and he tells me, and we talk about it and we pray together, and I don't shame him, because shame is the primary emotion that teenagers are feeling in our world, shame and anxiety. And I think it's happening with kids as well. You know, I heard a speaker give the stat that the people back in the 1960s that had the anxiety levels that many of our 10-year-olds have right now were hospitalized, because how intense that anxiety level is. And the reality is our 10-year-olds, and I mean, younger than that, are feeling this anxiety and are being exposed to things that we were never exposed to at that age. And the comparison game is a lot stronger. And so we have got to be able to invite other people to come in and help play that role. But also as parents, we have got to start talking early. You know, my real dream for alongside for this book is that parents would read it when their kids are 10 years old. Because if they wait until they're older, until they're teenagers, it's almost too late, you know, to start some of these patterns and habits. Like, I've got to start doing this. My oldest daughter's 9 now, and she, to me, seems already like so many of the teenagers that working with.
No kidding.
20 years. Yeah. So we've got to start now, like, doing these things. And I mean, the book is full of practical applications of how do you practically do that. But it's also full of stories. And that's the kind of book I want to read. I want to read a book that tells me transformation stories and tells me stories of hope and tells me stories that I'm not alone, but then gives me practical ways of how I can do this and how it can play out in my own life. And so if anyone's listening and they have younger children, I would encourage you to read it now and to not wait until they're teenagers and begin walking alongside them if you're not already.
Yeah. Well, I have it very, very marked up, and I intend to do all these things because it is really good. Because even, like I said, we just think what they're going through is so silly. But then when they get older, it still feels silly to us because we're dealing with bills and, you know, aging parents and all these things that aren't like having to do with the social things of, you know, high school. But also we just have to learn how to not invalidate each other. That's like what you're talking about. It's so good for any relationship. We need to just learn to listen and be with them.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So good. What would you say for a parent who is maybe they realizing that they're doing a lot of stuff and it's not quite right? It's not getting the results they wanted. How do you help them from not feeling like failures?
You know, when I first started preaching, when I was younger, one of my best friends came and heard me preach. And after the sermon, you know, I kind of was looking to him for affirmation, you know, hey, how'd I do? You know, because I thought I'd done a great job, you know, and he just looked at me and gave me a hug. And he said, "You are loved." He said, you are loved. And he said, I don't know if you believe that. He's like, because so much of what you're preaching is kind of coming out of, you've got to do more. You've got to earn it. You've got to earn it. Hmm. And he was saying, like, I feel like you were shooting on people. You should do more. I said, I was shooting on people. He said, shooting, S-H-O-U-L-D, shooting on people. He's like, you're shooting on people. They should do more because you're shooting on yourself. Hmm. And you're not convinced that God loves you, you know, just as you are. And you don't have to earn his love. He paid for that on the cross. And I feel like we are going to come across to ourselves and to our kids with a heavier weight unless we are convinced that we are Christ's beloved. Hmm. This is not a game of how good of a parent I can be. How much more can I do? Because that will crush us. That weight of guilt and doing more is crushing, and it's so heavy, and we cannot bear that. The best gift that we can give our kids is us understanding our belovedness in Christ, of us understanding that we only can love because he first loved us. There is no greater gift we can give them than us submitting ourselves to the love of Christ. And in order for us to do that, you know, what we have to do is we have to put ourselves in a position where Christ can walk alongside us. Mm-hmm. When have we taken a walk with Christ? When have we given him a chance to speak to us or to listen to us? Think about all the things that you want to do with your own children, and then invite your father to do those things with you. And after that has happened, it will be an overflow and not a to-do list.
That's so good. How have you implemented what your friend said? Like, how has that changed for you?
It's my biggest struggle in life. I'm in Enneagram 3.
Okay.
I'm an achiever. You know, like, I want to earn everything I can get. And it's honestly been really hard with this book coming out. Okay. Because, you know, there is so much more that I can do. So many more podcasts I can be on, radio interviews, speaking things.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's never an end. And so I want this book to be a success because I really believe it's helpful. But I put so much pressure on myself and achieving that, you know, the past couple months as it's come out have been crushing to me because I have just not set up good boundaries. And as the past couple weeks have, you know, been a healthier move. I'm meeting with my spiritual director after I get off this call with you, and I'm trying to, you know, step in to do some healthier things. My wife and I are doing marriage counseling, and we're in a healthy place, but we really want to have a great marriage. And so we're trying to like invite other people to come alongside us and speak wisdom into us. But, you know, the one thing that is the key, I think, is the commandment that's the most neglected out of the 10 of them. And that is to honor
the
Sabbath.
Don't kill people. I'm just kidding.
No. Yes. No, to honor the Sabbath and to keep it holy. You know, I mean, it's the commandment that's associated with the word holy. Like, we don't keep a Sabbath, and I'm just as guilty as anybody. But I tell you, when I do, when I'm willing to turn off my work and turn off my phone and be present with the Lord and my family, and the Lord just uses those days to energize me. And I know it feels really complicated to have a Sabbath as a parent. But I think if we can figure out how to set up some boundaries, whether it's an hour of a Sabbath a day or whether it's a, you know, one day a week. Andy Crouch wrote this book, The Tech Wise Family. Have you read it?
No. Huh?
It's amazing. I highly recommend read that before you read my book. It's so good. And it is short. It's a short read. I read it on one airplane flight, but there's so many practical things that parents can do and put into place when it comes to technology, The TechWise Family by Andy Crouch.
Okay.
But in there, he says, you know, our family takes 1 hour a day away from screens, 1 day a week away from screens, and 1 week a year away from screens.
Okay.
And they've reorganized their den where they move, you know, they took the TV out and they put a piano there. And my brother and his family, after they read it, they did that. They took the TV, you know, off the wall and put it on a roller cart and rolled it into a closet. And now when they want to watch TV together, they roll it back out. But I think we've got to intentionally create spaces, sacred spaces in our calendar and in our homes where we can allow God to walk alongside us. And as I've done more of that, it has really changed me. And so much of this book was written out of that context of me actually getting away and turning my phone off for days at a time. And that was really hard, but those were some of the most intimate moments I've ever had with the Lord. And so Natalie and I have tried now, you know, to alternate. Hey, babe, you take this day of solitude away this month. And next month, I'm going to go to this prayer center and I'm going to take a day of solitude away. And you go meet with your counselor today. And I'm going to go meet with my spiritual director tomorrow. And we try to tag team it together. Because if we are not allowing the Lord to come alongside us, then it's not going to work with our kids.
So true. That is really, really good. I love that. Thank you for sharing all this. It's very helpful.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to move to a lightning round now where I ask you questions and you answer as fast as you can.
Okay. Sounds fun. Let's do it.
Okay. What is at the very top of your bucket list?
Oh, man. Oh, I would say to travel to the national parks in the United States with my family in an RV. My wife thinks that's an awful idea, given the ages of our kids, but I think it would be amazing.
Wow. How many are there?
National parks? I don't know. I've been to 17. My brother and I did a road trip together after college, and then my dad joined me for the second half, and we did 17 in 29 days together.
Oh my gosh.
But it was an amazing adventure, and our kids are almost at the place where they are able to do it. So I'm super excited about doing it one day when I can convince Natalie to get on board.
Okay. That's great. Would you rent an RV or would you buy one?
Well, my friend Curtis just bought a minibus and is turning it into an RV, so I'm hoping he'll let me borrow it.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, that sounds so fun. Okay. If you could live in any home on a TV show, which one would you choose?
Full House, hands down. I mean, I wanted to be Uncle Jesse forever. I think that's why I became a youth pastor, because it's kind of like a surrogate uncle to a lot of people.
I love that. Okay. I would totally be on the Cosbys because they had that staircase that went into the living room or into the kitchen. I loved that.
Yes. Yes. That was super cool.
Yeah. I don't know. I wanted to be in that house. Okay. What is the scariest movie you've ever seen?
Silence of the Lambs when I was in eighth grade. And I don't think I've seen a scary movie since then because of that.
Okay. There you go. Yes. I don't remember really watching that one. The Shining freaked me out.
I'll never watch that movie.
Don't.
I'm a wimp.
I actually stayed in a hotel that in Colorado that looked over that.
Yes. You know, yes. I know what you're talking about.
Oh yeah. My gosh. No, it was not good to be like, look out the window of your hotel and see that hotel. Okay.
I did see Cape Fear. Did you ever see the movie Cape Fear?
No, I don't think so.
That was a scary one that I saw.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't watch it.
Okay. I won't. Yeah. The Shining ruined me. I'm over it. Okay. So which of the seven dwarves are you the most like?
Sleepy. I never sleep and need it. And so I wish that I could be him.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I get it. I'm definitely grumpy. Unfortunately, it's fine. Okay. So finally, what is something that you can't stop talking about? Everybody wishes you'd shut up.
Pellet ice. I love pellet ice. It's my favorite food. I turned 40 this year and some of my friends pitched in and bought me one of those, you know, home pellet ice machines.
Yeah?
That was like a Kickstarter campaign back in the day. And it has changed my life. I mean, I used to feel this great compulsion to stop at every gas station that I knew in town that had pellet ice for 79 cents.
Yes.
You could get pellet ice with a Diet Mountain Dew. And my wife wants me to stop drinking that stuff because it's bad for you. But
yes,
I just love flavored pellet ice. So now I have it in our home. And
you have flavored
like
pellet ice?
Well, I mean, we have pellet ice and then I can flavor it, you know, with whatever toppings we have. But it's kind of like constant snow cones in our house. First thing I do when I walk in the door is I grab a 32-ounce cup, fill it up, and just chomp on pellet ice. I love it.
Isn't that so bad for your teeth?
Well, the dentist told me I wouldn't have teeth by the time I'm 30, but I'm 40 and they're still there mostly.
Okay, so good. All right. Well, then you just keep chomping away. The only place I know to get it is Sonic.
Yes. And a lot of like Circle K gas stations have it. And Zaxby's have it as well.
Oh, we
I can send you a whole list of places with pellet ice.
That's so funny. No, we don't have Zaxby's. And I don't really think we have Circle K's in Dallas.
Maybe it's a good reason to move to North Carolina. Come
on. But I want to keep my teeth, so maybe I'll say
that's true. That's good. The pellet ice is softer than the ice that was in our freezer, and so it's better for my teeth.
Well, you tell yourself whatever you want to tell yourself. Awesome. Well, Drew, thank you so much for this labor of love of this book and for sharing it with us.
Emily, thank you so much for having me. It's really been a gift to be with you, and I hope it's been helpful for some parents as well.
I got so much out of that. One of my favorite quotes is when he said, "So often we care more about fixing the problem than fighting for the relationship." Ugh, yes, so true. So what will your strategy be to struggle well based on what Drew said? He talked about how we need a long haul vision, that kids are not contractual relationships, but covenant relationships. It's not about how if they hold up their end of the bargain, then we will love them and provide for them. It's so hard though, guys. I tell my kids when they are up to no good, I'm going to make them live on the roof. Like, I'm not kicking them out of the house. I mean, kind of. I'm kicking them to the top of the house. But you do, don't you just want to be like, goodbye? But that is not the kind of relationship we're in with our kids. So we are in a covenant relationship with God. Maybe you do some studying about that this week. Because we are the children in that relationship, and aren't we so thankful that he does not break up with us when we are up to no good? Maybe this week you struggle well by having a look at how maybe your own insecurities are coloring the way you're parenting. I really tend to parent out of a place of fear, and it's something I have to be incredibly intentional about. And as I have grown in that, my parenting is completely different. I loved what Drew said about embodied presence, and how God thought it was a big enough deal to come here himself to spend time with us. How could we be more present with our kids this week? And just another reiteration of how important community is when Drew was talking about how having other people come alongside the teenager, it lends credibility to all the things that you're saying, and they really may understand and have insights into your kids that you are not able to see because you're so close to the situation, like a you can't see the forest for the trees type of a thing. If you happen to find this interview particularly valuable, hit share and send it along to your people so it can encourage them too. Your recommendations are so valuable to getting this resource in the right hands. So next week, I am going to not be here. It is my birthday and I am the boss, and so I'm taking the week off. But don't forget to join me on your favorite social media channel at Struggle Well Project. I'm on Facebook, but Instagram is my favorite. Together, we will continue the practice of loving our actual lives. Remember, perfection is nonsense, and peace is a perspective shift away. We do not have to strive because we are already enough. Let me pray for us. Lord, I lift up parents of teenagers. And God, thank you for the perspective of Drew Hill to help me remember being a teenager is hard. Lord, would you please give so much extra grace and wisdom and patience and endurance for teenagers as they try to navigate growing up? It is so awkward. I would not want to go back there. Lord, this holiday season, I pray for families who are getting together where things are tricky. I pray for beautiful interactions. I pray for healing. I pray for it to go better than my sweet listeners even thought it would go. Lord, thank you that you hear us. In Jesus' name, amen.